Alright, time for DoNotGod.com video presentation. So I'm going to continue playing some videos from whatever it was called. Yeah, some sort of convention thing of anti-natalist people who are less than impressed by existence. Okay, it's got too many flaws, too many deep and horrible aspects or secrets, and you know they're not all that secret, right? They don't really show up until you do the whole game. You know, the end of the game is a lot worse than how it sort of starts, I suppose, except you cry a lot more when you're young, you know, and you cry a lot less when you're old, and it's not because you're not sadder, you know, it's because you know it doesn't work. I guess probably doesn't do any good. But it all is kind of hard to, if you really think about it. And that's the question, is do people really think about anything? So I sort of thought, one of the thoughts that rose out of my mind when I was thinking about the subject's going to be animals and how to do what's the best thing we can do for them, sort of, I believe. Yeah, that's what the subject's going to be. That just reminds me of my childhood, different things. And that sort of reminds me of triggers and all this kind of stuff. And so I was thinking about the idea that you're going to the beach. And, back in the 70s or something, there could have been a billboard for Jaws, you know, the movie. with the blue screen, with the shark and the woman. And, you know, that probably on your way to the beach, that probably wouldn't be a very good starting thought. Change your whole day, really. The whole experience could be fundamentally altered. Not that it would be awful or horrible, but it might take some of the fun out of it. You might just not go in the water. it certainly would give you some pause, some reflection. And kind of just change the game. And it doesn't take much, is sort of the point, I guess. It doesn't take much thinking. It doesn't take much of an interjection of reality to, really cut the fun out of life. And it's a real problem, being an anti-natalist or effelist, is the fact that you have to live with that all the time, the fear and the dread and the horror and the kind of morbid realization of just how much tragedy and sadness you've seen, to think about all the stuff that you've seen raped and brutalized, so to speak, by nature. Which brings me to another thought. I'm saying, okay, in terms of making arguments to people. And what I thought of was, well, what if, nature was really a plan between, some sort of human entities, and they used animals, as bullets, and they were using their animals to try to defeat each other, have the animals compete with each other, like a dog fight or a cockfight, except on a much grander scale. And all of these animals would be subjected to pointless and silly horror, just to win the game. They'd come up with evolutionary strategies of, what came to mind is I thought of all the mixed messages I got as a kid. They used to have a show called Wild Kingdom, and that would be on right before The Wonderful World of Disney. And, Disney would be having, little bears that get into a honeypot. They get into somebody's kitchen and have fun. The animal stories were always kind of fun. In the show before that, it's not that, it was sort of prettied up. But you got a taste of the fact that just, it's kind of dismal. And then there was also Jacques Cousteau, and you'd see, like, these stupid fish that, at high tide, they all swim up on the shore and kind of wiggle themselves into the sand and do their squirting and die. And it's just, it's just kind of bleak, And you're just saying, well, this is life on Earth. It just, doesn't give you much of a good feeling. It didn't give me any anyway. It just gave me kind of a horror about it. It's just, this is like watching Holocaust TV. So fascinating in terms of, I didn't know that, but not very good in terms of how do I put this into my brain and say everything's okay, because that's just not okay. And the same thing like the salmon. They show the salmon jumping, doing all this spectacular stuff. And what they really don't emphasize is the fact that their body's completely deforming for this one purpose, to go upstream, beat the shit out of each other, to, lay eggs and die. And, I wouldn't want to live that life. All right, anyway, so I guess that's enough context for, I had a mixed experience with nature. I mean, the fact is I liked the peace and quiet of the refuse in the trees and in the woods and in the swamp. And I liked playing with the animals, so to speak, manipulating a pile of ants and watching how they behave, or turtles or some other thing. And, just watching sometimes. The dark side of it is, as I knew, it was this carnage, that everything's just sitting and waiting for something to trap them, the snapping turtle, the something is going to try to fool them and get them into a trap where they're going to make a mess out of them. Disaster lurking around every corner. Terribly unpleasant prospect to have to live in a world full of trapdoors and Damocles swords. And then I realized I was already in that world too. As you get a little older and you find out the story and the jeopardy you're in too, and they have all these things that are coming to get you, polio or this or that, or something else is going to come to get you. I was just kind of saying what I'm saying now is I don't remember signing up for any of this. I don't remember saying this is a great idea. Count me in. I didn't buy a ticket. So anyway, that's a context of sorts. So it's really just about, people say they love animals and they all have all this stuff. And it's like, well, do you really love them? Because nature's put them in a horrible position of just being tools for a game of musical DNA or whatever. Winner take all, gladiator war, whatever. They're just gladiators. Rich people own them, and they put them in an arena and have them fight. And if it wasn't, the only reason why you tolerate it is because somehow a human didn't do it. But if a human had thought up the idea, you'd say, fuck you, you can't do that. You can't, subject animals to all this cruelty for nothing, for your entertainment. That's ridiculous. And, that's the problem, is getting people to understand that it doesn't matter who created it. The fact is the creation sucks. It's just terrible. 10,000 dead turtles, baby turtles, for every sea turtle you can find swimming about. The attrition numbers are insane. And if you had to do the killing, you wouldn't take the job. If you had to do just one of it, a tiny speck of it. So why pretend there's anything really beautiful? And why pretend... there's no point in saying it's not beautiful. I'm just saying it's no point in saying we don't find... don't have an affinity with it, because we had to live in it. We're designed to live in it, so of course we have an affinity, a connection to it. But it's evil. It's so substantially horrid as a system, and nothing should be allowed to be raped that way. When we have the power to say no. Okay, so that's probably enough context. All right, so these two people will be talking about the problem of animals in one way or another. So we'll just let him do his spiel. Maybe. Can I change the speed while I'm in here? Doesn't look like it. I don't see any settings button. Well, we'll just leave it. Play. Yeah, that's where I'll hit.
Welcome to this, the first session of day two for the antinatalist advocacy.
Okay.
Session four introduction. I'm sure you all know who he is, but I'm going to give a brief one anyway, and then we will get into contraception. Oscar is a moral philosopher in the Department of Philosophy and Anthropology at the University of Santiago de Compostela. I hope I said that correctly. He's written...
Doesn't sound too good. University of De Compostela. Compost heap. But anyway, I just make some stupid, pointless jokes. So anyway, so he's some guy who, you know, at least in some other country, you know, he's somebody. Now it's broken. Oh, this must be moron again. He broke the video. Yeah, some audio problems. Yes, technology is difficult. Okay, so...
I'll hand over to you to do your thing.
Good.
Yeah, okay, well, thanks a lot. So I'm going to speak here about wild animal contraception, but... I'll just tackle some of the, as you can see in the slide.
So one of the easiest ways to contracept, frankly, sorry, expedient ones, cheapest, okay, is the idea of culling, selectively eradicating the problem by preventing the reproduction by ending the life. And, the argument can be made that these are not lives that ending is all that tragic. They're not going to do, the story they've already written doesn't have any point to it. It's not really going anywhere. So when it ends is kind of irrelevant because you can just start a new one, and it's the same story. Deer is deer is deer is deer. It's not like the differences of their capacity to make a contribution is in any way distinct or different, and therefore there can't really be a statement about how, well, that deer is really important, he's the critical deer, he's going to cure cancer. Those kind of arguments are kind of disappear. So none of them are bad deers versus good deers, that kind of thing. There's no criminal deers, there's no rape deers kind of thing, it's all the same kind of behavior. And so the real argument is what's practical? Can you afford to spend $1,000 per prevention of a pregnancy? Or if you can get the job done for $1, should you go for it, even though it's a little messier? I mean, just a little messier. It's not a whole lot messier because, frankly, to fuck up their reproduction system, you might have to make them sick and uncomfortable. I mean, you might cause them some discomfort by having to essentially, poison their reproductive functions. So it's not free either. So what's better? The bullet they never saw, that makes them sort of disappear in an instant, or, even a guillotine. I actually made videos in the past just explaining how, it's sort of a physics technical argument. And when you really think about it, guillotines are really efficient because they cut off the blood pressure to your brain completely. No blood pressure, no function. I mean, just it all stops. There's no electricity, there's no nothing. It all stops. And so you're just instantly unconscious. I mean, it stops. There's no battery backup system. So when the blood pressure is gone, the function's gone. And that would probably be the most humane thing to do, is to, you know, make a device where the deer sticks its head in and its head doesn't come back out. I'm laughing, it's not really funny, but it's a real point that we have to find we have to be pragmatic and get the job done, and it has to be done in some way that's practical. I mean, not ideal. We can't hope for ideals. You have to do what's possible, reasonably possible. All right, anyway. But I mean, it's a real problem, and it needs a real solution. And, the very idea of trying to spread, sterilization mechanisms into the environment, is just not very practical.
The ethical considerations involved. So I'm not gonna address the technical issues surrounding this. I'll say just a word about those. And also in presenting this field of wild animal contraception, I'm gonna be addressing other issues having to do with how the lives of animals in the wild are, and well, what reasons we have to help them. So, also sorry, because some of the slides are not gonna be like nice ones, but that's how our reality is, but yeah.
So they're not, so that's something I've also been terribly uncomfortable with over the years is, and it's just probably my own, a part of my own problem, psychological problem, in dealing with the images. But yeah, I mean, we really shouldn't have to sit there and shove these images in front of you, for you to get the message. It shouldn't have to get too graphic. Now, I could say if you saw the Jaws movie, there's a scene where the girl's getting killed by the shark, and to me, it was very, very hard to watch. It was so real and horrible and just awful to think about. That's a part of an argument, but part of me says we shouldn't have to go there. I mean, people should be honest enough to know that, yes, they've seen horror, they've seen ugly things, and they don't need it rubbed in their nose, so to speak, for them to appreciate that they have to acknowledge that that stuff exists, and that's what they have to justify. And that their advocacy or their pro-life position comes with the obligation to say, you would do it to the animal. You would shove it in that condition. Because by defending the system, you're defending what the system produces, obviously. So if you're going to defend nature, you have to defend all the murders. And you'd have to say that you would be willing to be the arbiter, to be the one who hands the... who gives the 10-year-old kid cancer. You're the one that does it. You have to stick it in his pocket. You have to say, you got 10 kids sitting in front of you, you have to sit there and shove these ugly fates into their pocket. And if you're not willing to do that, and say you're willing to do that, or willing to work at the slaughterhouse for your dinner, then you really are a hypocrite, and you're really kind of a shitty human being if you aren't willing to stand up and say, yeah, I'll defend the suffering I'm going to impose by imposing it directly. Because that's what you're doing. You're imposing it. You're just pretending you don't have to take a responsibility for it. You're voting for it. That's the fact. And you should have to pay for it if you're going to vote for it.
I hope there are, nevertheless, not too awful to watch. Anyway, so the vast majority of the animals that exist are not out there suffering in slaughterhouses and in factory farms or in fish factories. And saying this is saying a great deal already, because there are a lot, really a lot of animals in those places, right? We may be speaking of maybe a number of vertebrates killed often in terrible ways by humans, but maybe like around, say, 2 billion, but then, or 2 trillion, sorry. But then the number of
2 trillion a year? I don't think so. you could argue a chicken a day or something per person or something like that, I suppose. But I don't know, you know. But whatever. But the numbers in nature are obscene. I mean, there's schools of fish that are, you know, 5 million fish in one school. That kind of crap is out there.
Invertebrates that are killed by humans is even higher, maybe 25 trillion, according to some estimates. But when we speak about wild animals, we are talking about maybe potentially a number of 10 to the power of 18, 19, 20. It's like orders of magnitude higher, a way higher number of animals. And their lives, unfortunately, are not that great. They suffer and die prematurely due to a number of reasons, including, for instance, lack of food or water, hostile weather conditions, also disease, parasitism, things like...
Oh, yeah, all the horrible. I mean, the disease is just horrible. I mean, see all this stuff, that's why I can't, you know, on some level, it's hard to do this on a personal level. See, I look at this rabbit, and I think of the first rabbit I had was a rabbit I found that must have been a domesticated rabbit because he was black at one point, some relative of his anyway, let's just put it that way, because he had all the features of a wild rabbit, right size, you know, that kind of stuff, but he obviously had these features of something domesticated. And somebody had shot him with an arrow, and he had this wound in his neck, going right through his neck. And, I was making, like, whatever, you know, $5 a week delivering newspapers, and I spent a few $100 to, you know, try to help the rabbit. And, he survived, he was fine in a way, but the wound never healed, it just never healed. And then he got killed by a bunch of crazed dogs, ate the rabbit hutch. I mean, they ate it. I mean, there was a whole big rabbit hutch, and they ate it. I mean, there was just little pieces of kindling left. And I wasn't living in the middle of the Ozarks or something. I mean, it actually was quite spooky, you know, that you could be living somewhere where somehow a few dogs got together and decided to go insane. It all gets personal. And it's just so, I wouldn't impose this shit again and again and again, force these animals to die over and over and over again. For what? So you can watch some stupid movie, have a drink, you know, fantasize about some life you're not living, and then go to sleep, and then start over another stupid moronic day. I mean, what you're doing with your existence isn't nearly good enough to pay this price. This one rabbit is too high a fucking price for you.
Accidents, all kind of deaths, terrible ones. And often, in many cases, it's not just that these animals have these awful deaths. It's also that, they don't have really great lives in addition to the experience of their death. So we can see this in the case of, I'm sorry if this picture is not a nice one to see, but if we consider the fate of an animal like a chick, a small bird that falls from the nest and may agonize to death, suffering from the pain of the injuries, maybe starving to death, maybe being eaten by other animals. So,
and let's understand, it's not that this is the rare case. It's that some birds are evolved to lay too many eggs. They lay, six, and they deliberately, pick the four best kids, and they kick the two shitty ones out. So we're talking about huge numbers for like a lot of these, swamp birds, the flamingo types and things like that. They don't fall out of the nest. They are thrown the fuck out. Who could defend this?
This is not something that happens to a minority of animals, right? There are ways in which we can have a general idea of what may be the levels of well-being.
Yeah, so that's another image that comes to mind. There was this great National Geographic's image of a crocodile's mouth with a little frog. And you sort of got the, it was such beautiful color, beautiful picture. And you got this impression that it was just kind of cute. But then when you really looked at the picture, you could see there's little holes in the frog. I mean, the frog isn't having a good time.
That animals have out there, like looking at things like, for instance, their population dynamics or their age-specific mortality or their reproductive strategy. Now, why is this so? Well, because by looking at these things, we can...
So reproductive strategy means like octopuses, 10,000 baby octopuses. And they're fully functional. Let's understand, they're not born like us, stupid and dysfunctional. They're born octopuses, okay? I mean, they have to go out and eat, and they have to do all this stuff. They have to do a whole bunch of functionality. So they're pretty much octopuses. So it's hard to make some argument that they aren't alive and real and in the game, because they're playing the damn game pretty well, almost as well as the adults in some sense. So let's not pretend they aren't, they're not real animals. They're not fetuses. They're not zygotes. No, they're freaking octopuses. And 10,000 of them have to be squished for one to get to reproduction. Two of them. Insane numbers.
Find that, they're all kind of different animals with respect to how their numbers vary through time. And also with respect to how old or young they are when they die, or when the majority of them die. And also, we can also look at the way in which they reproduce.
So that's the good thing about doing these videos, is I can just react to every sentence he makes. So just pointing out the age thing, because again, it's bad enough that this Simon Bauer sinister called nature has created this evil system and is subjecting these poor organisms to play this horrible gladiator game. But the reality is, it's all children. I mean, the vast majority of the death is happening to kids. And that was true for humans. Humans had, a woman could live to be 30 or 40. Okay. And the fact is, it's how long her eggs last and her utility lasts. So clearly that was part of that was the magic number in a sense. And, she could have 10 kids easily. And most of them are supposed to die. I mean, that was the game. The game was most of them die. And, you barely increase your population because it was dangerous to increase it anyway, right? I mean, a tribe of, a clique of gorillas or chimpanzees, they can't survive over time if they start demanding too much territory, because then they have to fight too often and they're going to lose those fights eventually. So the winning strategy is to just keep it sustainable. And so they're really not designed, to overpopulate. And look what happens to organisms that do, lemmings. What happens to the excess population? Well, it's driven crazy, and jumps into the rivers and does all kinds of shit that just ends up getting it killed. I mean, they're not committing suicide on purpose. They're committing... fuck this, I can't stand it. And that gets them killed.
That is, how many offspring they have. And if we look at that, we can see some things that are highly relevant for, the kind of evaluation that we can do of how good or bad the lives of these animals are. So what happens is that the vast majority of animals reproduce by having huge numbers of offspring. I mean, if we consider, for instance, some amphibians, they may lay thousands of eggs. If we consider some fish species, they may lay millions of them, sometimes hundreds of millions of them. And the fact is that, on average, these animals don't survive to maturity, because otherwise their population would explode. They would grow dramatically in a very short time. What happens, however...
So just look at it. Look at it. This is the reality. So all of these are... That's Joey, Jimmy, Bobby, Sissy, Twincy... Quincy, Bincy, Buncy, Buncy. I mean, you can just go here and just all of these things are going to be, they're going to start writing the story and they're going to be brutally killed. And it's your fault, pro-lifer, pro-naturist. Okay, it's your fault because you'll sit there and defend this mass slaughter. And again, if this was my invention, if Gary had invented this for the very purpose of frogs taking over the world, okay, that we're going to make all these little frogs and then we're going to have my frogs attack your frogs and blah, 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 blah. If I had invented this, you would despise it. You'd be able to see, obviously, what a crazy motherfucker thought this up. But because nature did it, somehow, well, so what? No problem. Mass murder is fine. If all the Jews are getting killed by a virus, right? Well, then all the conspiracy nuts will say somebody made the virus. You know, but let's just say an asteroid crosses, you know, hurts Earth and a virus pops out and only kills Jews. You know, is it going to make it okay because a human didn't do it? I mean, people are just, you know, I don't know how you could pretend this, that makes sense to you. Killing children makes sense. It's a great idea.
Is that the vast majority of them die often shortly after coming into existence. And if, for instance, you look at a pond where a frog may have lay her eggs, you come there first and you can see a lot of eggs there. Then you come back a few days later and you'll find that the eggs are no longer there. What you'll find are tadpoles. But the number of tadpoles that are around is, of course, smaller than the number of eggs. And then you come back some days later and you'll find that the tadpoles are bigger, but they're not.
Yeah, I know, but it just didn't really work because, you know, then this is some species of frog that's really tiny, okay, that's actually in New Jersey. And I only saw them once. And they're tiny little black frogs. And so I actually saw a puddle, you know, where the tadpoles were, watched this very event, you know, where there was a lot of tadpoles. But there did end up being an awful lot of frogs. So nobody, like, you know, it must be a kind of tadpole that nobody picked on much. The birds didn't find it, something, who knows what. But a lot of them survived. And it was, you know, there was hundreds of these little tiny black frogs all around the little water hole.
Birds have significantly dwindled. Because many of them die in the process. And this is not something that happens in the case of a minority of animals. This happens to many animals, I mean, the majority.
Yes, this is the good example from my perspective. Because, you know, look, they're turtles, okay? People think, oh, turtles, dumb, stupid, they don't got much of a brain, blah, 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 who cares? But if you're really looking at a turtle's eye, there's shit going on in there. They got great eyes, frankly. Some of them are just magnificently beautiful eyes. Going to get pecked to death. I mean, you know, it's going to be pecked to death. Fuck. That's okay with you. You would do it. It's worth it. We're worth it. The fun we're having is so worth it. Just run some more over. Oh, fuck.
Three of the animals we're producing this way, right? By having many of them. So, the fact is that we typically don't think of that. So when we look, for instance, at a picture like this one, what we find is, oh, these cute animals, these nice...
Yeah, see, now that's something that, you know, it's always stuck with me when seeing this kind of image, just because this one you see when you're a little kid and you kind of do the math. And, you know, they're just so cute. And you just start saying, but I know, you know, in 5 weeks... there ain't going to be 13 of them anymore. You know, and you see it, you know, if you actually pay any attention, if you actually sit by a duck pond, you'll see this event happen where, oh yeah, there's 10 of those little things. And then 3 weeks later, there's 7, you know, and then there's 5. Yeah. It doesn't hurt you.
These ducklings here, and we don't consider that on average only one of them per parent will make it to maturity, right? And as we said, and as I said before,
it's a lot less than that because they have them every single year, so they might live 10 or 12, I don't know how long they live, geese and ducks, but let's just say 10 years. You know, that's 100 chicks, and you know, 98 of them have to die as chicks.
we saw.
As young people. Yeah.
Can be very painful, right? So when animals die and they are very young, what happens is that they don't live long enough for them to have positive experiences, but they have the negative experience of dying, you know, starving to death, being eaten alive, and so on, right? Okay, so in light of this, maybe we can make some guesses about what the wealth...
I think that's another point to make, just even about, I sort of have that sense that the first 3 years of my life, now even though I don't remember much of it, you know, little things. I remember little spinning things in a crib. I remember a couple of little things, but I remember always being uncomfortable. Always, you know, not feeling blissful, but always feeling too hot or too cold or too something. Always feeling stuffy and, you know, choky and uncomfortable. So yeah, why would I want to endure that and then get killed? And then endure that and get killed, and then endure that and get killed, and then why would I want to do that over and over and over again? And that's what any of you life defenders are saying. You want to force something to relive shit over and over and over and over and over.
Distributions in populations, maybe consider for instance this table where the horizontal axis represents time and the vertical one, the numbers of animals. That is, for a certain population of animals, how many animals are present there at a given time? So with some animals, it works like this. So what happens is that they have low juvenile mortality. Many of them survive until, you know, they reach a very old age. This is what happens, for instance, in the case of human beings. But cases like this are a minority. These are called titans.
Well, also, you know, it's like the turtle thing. The turtle could live to be 800 years. And just imagine it's going to lay hundreds of eggs every single year. Every single year.
One, when it comes to, you know, designing the different survivorship, you know, curves among different animals. Now, type two would be a mixture of type one and type three, but you know, what we are especially concerned with here is type 3, and type 3 is this. These animals classified in type 3, they have very high numbers of animals that die when they're very young. They have very high juvenile mortality. So,
and the ones even with low maturity, you know, are still a very high rate. So let's understand, you could have something like the carnivores, you know, and, you know, their mortality is maybe 8 to 1. You know, so 8 cubs have to die for every 1 adult. You know, not terrible. I mean, it's not 8,000 to 1, right? So that's okay. That's, wow, it's so much better than it could be. It could be so much worse. Is that what we're going to actually say? But could you imagine yourself? Can you really imagine yourself walking up to the little lion cubs and beating them to death or squeezing them to death or, you know, taking a dull knife and cutting them to death? Could you do that? And if you say honestly, no, I couldn't do that. I couldn't even watch that. I don't want to even think about that. Then you have to concede you're admitting you're not really worth it, right? You wouldn't let that be the price paid for what you're doing, would you? Would you say it's a fair bargain? Yes, go ahead. Horribly kill, you know, 8 little lion cubs, terrorize them first, maybe have them on a rock with hyenas, you know, circling, you know, you're worth it? You really think so? Fucker. Yeah, oh, bullshit you are. Bullshit you are.
This is interesting because this fits what we've seen before. The fact that many animals reproduce by having many offspring who die when they are very young. So suppose we made some, you know, some estimates of what the well-being of animals in these populations may be. Well, there's going to be inequality for sure. I mean, not all animals have the same levels of well-being. Not all lives are equally good or bad. But, you know, these graphs kind of give us...
Yeah, that whole good and bad thing, though, just doesn't really work out. Because, you know, because the good thing really is dependent on the bad thing. You got to be really hungry. You got to be thirsty. You got to be all these things. And so your capacity to be uncomfortable is kind of connected to your capacity to be comfortable, to be to experience relief and exhilaration. So the two things I think are connected, and that's why you see all that animation and the emotion of, say, chimpanzees, or that they have this great deal of capacity to be very, very angry, very, very sad, very, very everything, and that's part of the passion. The price of it is, frankly, the dark side is going to weigh more than the value of that relief. The relief from some horror isn't nearly enough of a good, to justify the horror you don't get relief from.
They give us a hint of the levels of well-being that there can be in those populations. Because if you die very old, you may expect to have a good life. I mean, not always, but you may. Not always, because you may have some, chronic disease.
I just don't even understand this whole good life crap. I mean, what does that actually mean? You mean you're raped and pillaged? You mean you made somebody else do your work for you? you had it really easy and other people had it kind of shitty. Other people had to go to work so you didn't have to, kind of thing. It's hard to put your finger on this good life and what life, frankly, I would want to live. I wouldn't want to live the life of a high maintenance sucker of the value of other people's lives, forcing them to be slaves to my needs. Ooh, that's just plain creepy.
Something. Whereas if you die when you are very young, your life is going to be pretty bad. So imagine that we try to, draw some graphic where we represent how good or bad the lives of animals can be. So if we are optimistic concerning how the lives of the animals of type 1 may be...
See, I think this is where charts and getting technical might get you into trouble. I don't know if there's much point in trying to make these kind of arguments, about trying to put a real hard number or a weight on things. You can just make the argument that, try to analogize it to the weights you place on value, and how much you value your immunity to certain things. You're so grateful that certain things didn't happen to you. And just recognize the power of that gratitude in the negative sense, in the sense of just how much you would pay to preserve your immunity, how much you would pay to avoid not being immune.
We may think that, the level of well-being may be like the one you see in the left, right? Where the horizontal line represents the zero level at which life starts being net positive or net negative. If we're less optimistic, that means that many animals...
Say, the other part of this is just there's no way to make the complete story, right? A human being needs to understand that when I'm making this video, I haven't had the, I haven't died, okay? And I may have to, it may be my fate that I die horribly, and I'd be even more, oh shit, I should have punched the camera. I should have done something more, to send the message to these motherfuckers, because I wouldn't want to do this ever again. Okay, so I don't want to do it now, and I certainly am not going to want to do it if I end up with one of those horrible deaths. I'm going to be even more pissed off at my parents. I'm going to even be more angry that nobody had these conversations, that these fucking weak-minded, sloppy pigs decide to reproduce and they don't give it much thought. They think it's something to celebrate. I have relatives that do this. They celebrate it. They celebrate, oh, we're going to put another shithead at risk. And they're happy. The fuckers. I'd like to just kick them in the cunt.
Will have net negative levels. But as you'll recall, only a minority of the animals can fit within type 1. The majority of them will fall within type 3. And here, if we have an optimistic assessment, we may be relatively uncertain about how many animals have positive levels of well-being and how many of them have
negative. So, again, but let's just say that all the jackasses in this conversation haven't done the worst part of their life yet. They haven't had the worst of it yet. It's just a fact. There's very few people that are just going to drop dead of an aneurysm tomorrow, right? The vast majority of the people listening to me, they're not going to get lucky, okay, and all have a great death. So they really haven't paid the real hard price yet. I mean, the pliers haven't been applied to their testicles quite yet. You know, and they're sitting there telling me, it's all fine, it's going to be great, I can't wait, blah, 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 blah. It's all talk, it's just these weak words in the face of what they're going to realize is absolute horror when they're in that lifeboat.
And negative ones.
And the sharks are circling.
But if we are less optimistic, then...
The Grim Reaper shark. It's heading right for you.
It may well be the case that the vast majority of them have very bad life. So this shows that for many animals, coming into existence is no blessing. It's something pretty bad. It also indicates that the lives of animals may vary significantly. So there are animals of certain populations, of certain species, who have much worse lives than others, right? Okay, so... Once we've seen that, the next point to consider here is the fact that human...
See, this bird thing is a tricky one, right? Because this is a whole different level of evolution, you know, the whole dinosaur thing. It's sort of separated, but they did a lot of the same things the mammals did, you know, in creating an alertness and a cleverness and, you know, these different things. And, you know, even the speaking part, you know, some of them have an awful lot of communication skills. You know, not a language, but they definitely have a capacity to communicate to each other, distress, there's a snake, there's something, you know, they are communally interacting with each other in very elaborate and sophisticated ways. And, you know, people just don't give it any thought at all. They look into that little eyeball and they don't see nothing. They just see, you know, it's a marble. You know, it's not a real thing looking back at you. And it's just so ignorant. But you can't say it's ignorant. Because people just want to make it go away. They just don't want to deal with reality.
Beings, while often indifferent to what happens to non-human animals, in some cases they react. And they do things that can help animals. So there are many different ways in which human beings are helping animals out there.
So this is the horrifying part from my perspective, because this is like Dr. Frankenstein helping. Yeah, you know, he's going to put your brain in another body, and it's going to be all kinds of scar tissue and all kinds of horror. So, I mean, I'm laughing again just because I find that this is so horrible that there's all these people with these good intentions where they sincerely care. And they don't recognize that the best way to care is to break the fucking thing's neck. It's just the truth. Okay? Imposing surgery, it's not something he signed up for. He didn't say, give me chemo. He didn't say, do this, do that. Cut my eyeballs out and, you know. But you put a harness, you know, cut my legs off and put a harness on me. He didn't sign up for any of that shit. You're not doing him any favors, frankly. And that's just the truth. You're just prolonging... the slow death. And I don't mean to be brutal about it, but there's no other way to say it. How am I going to convince you that you can't put your goodwill into guns, knives, you know, the negative things, more pain? You don't put your goodwill into causing more pain. You put your goodwill into truly preventing the possibility of more pain. You do the humane thing is to gracefully exit the animal. So this is another thing I take from personal experience, because people would bring me, you know, I was sort of a Tarzan nature boy kind of kid, and people would bring me broken animals, okay? Because I was, you know, nobody else could, you know, they dump it on somebody, right? So they dumped it on me. I don't know. I don't even know how it even got by word of mouth that I was the person to do this. I guess part of it was people would call me if there was a mouse in their house or some other kind of thing, and I'd catch it and blah, blah, you know. But so I was always, you know, people just show up with a bird that crashed into a building and has a broken neck. And all I can do is make it comfortable while it dies. There was nothing. I mean, I can't do anything. I got no special little things I can sprinkle on it. So, yeah, once in a while something would recover. I raised a crow once. No, it was a raven, actually. It was illegal to have one. You know, it was a pet, so I had to give it to the zoo. But, I did have successes. But, you know, most of the time, yeah, all I was there for is to at least acknowledge and do what I could, but I didn't have the mental strength or authority to do what I should have done, which is put it to sleep, let it go to sleep, and not wake up. That's the humane thing to do. That's the decent thing to do. Trying to save things so they can die some other day isn't doing them a favor.
Very well. I mean, wild animals really shouldn't be only considered. I mean, we shouldn't only consider as wild those animals that are maybe out there in, I don't know, national parks or, you know, in the forest or so. There are also wild animals in agricultural areas or urban or suburban areas. And many of these animals, when they are injured, when they are, for instance, sick or when they are orphaned, they may get help. There are also other initiatives, such as rescues of animals when they're affected by extreme weather events or natural disasters.
And it's just terrible. Like I said, all they do is prolong the pain. Just save them so they can die of something else the next day and just die over and over again. Sorry. Not smart.
And there may be also, there actually are other initiatives that help very large numbers of animals. So this picture you see here, as you can see, it's a small plane, and you see they are manipulating something there. So, well, the things that they are manipulating, they are doses of, they are baits that have doses of a vaccine, in this case, against rabies. And they are throwing them from the air because they want to prevent the spread of this disease among certain animals. The reason why they do this is because they don't want...
Right. So it's for to protect the humans from the transmission of the rabies. Yeah, so it's not even sincere in any kind of give a shit about the welfare of the animals. And again, who knows what it... how much discomfort the animal experiences being vaccinated. You know, obviously if it was so simple, then we would just take the vaccine, wouldn't we?
These animals to pass this disease to human beings. However, by doing this, they are helping very significantly the animals that are vaccinated, right? And this is not something new. This has been done for decades already. Since the 80s, you can find scientific papers and journals, addressing this that are more than 40 years old.
So it would be just better if they were just mixing doses of go to sleep, you know, don't wake up berries, you know, from Blue Lagoon, you know, whatever, never wake up berries. Yeah, that would be the kind thing to do, is just put everything to sleep and don't let it wake up.
These programs, as I say, they have been implemented first with pilot programs, then they have been monitored and after this monitorization, they have been expanded to other places, and they have not been done only in the case of diseases like rabies. They have also been applied in the case of diseases such as tuberculosis, anthrax, swine fever, and several others. So there's a lot of...
Yeah, well, that's the disgusting part, right? So the guy that I did a video, what the hell was his name? the guy with the baboons, right? You know, and the baboons got tuberculosis and all got killed. The great apes all get polio. You know, fall out of the tree and get eaten. You know, it's all brutal. It's brutal, horrible. Nobody comes to rest. Nobody shows up with a stretcher. Nobody shows up doing anything to comfort them. No, they just get beaten to death.
I've experienced all of this already, meaning that, you know, we could do more to help these people. Okay, however, first, you can think of an objection, right? Which is, what if by helping animals, we do more harm than good? And the best example of this that we can think of is what happens when we feed animals. So in this picture, you can see some manatees that are being fed some lettuce. So what happens when we provide food to animals, but also when we help them in other ways, is just that feeding them would be the clearest example.
Yeah, well, they're only doing that to compensate for all the manatees they've hacked big giant holes in and cut to pieces and killed. So, you know, they're destroying their capacity to, you know, productively reproduce by, you know, fucking up their environment. The water's too hot, lots of things they do that fuck them up. Simple enough. And you're trying to compensate, but you're trying to keep them alive so you people can pay money to go in the glass-bottom boat and look at the manatee swimming underneath them. You know, bullshit. Just no good reason to have manatees. You know, it's no good reason.
Is that we can make their numbers grow. So, for instance, suppose that there is a population of animals that is starving, you know? And this is bad, and we can help them. But if we do this, then we run the risk of, you know, multiplying the population of these animals and make the case that in the future they'll suffer a lot. Is there something we can do about this? Well, the fact is that there is something we can do about this, which is combining the program where we are helping animals with contraception. Now, contraception programs have been run already in many different places all around the world. As you can see here in these pictures,
so let's just understand that if any of this stuff was as benign as he wants to present it as, we would be doing it. You know, we'd like to take a sterilization pill, wouldn't we? You know, if it didn't harm us in any way at all. That's not the standard. So all of this is a little bit, you know, fudgy and fake. In the sense that, oh yeah, we just invent this little pill, it solves the problem. Well, if it was that easy a problem to solve, we'd solve it for ourselves. And we haven't done that.
This is something that appears in the news every now and then. A clear example of this is what happens in the case of birds who live in towns or cities. And at some point, people decide that, well, you know, they're too numerous, we want to get rid of them, and they want to kill them. So an alternative to that, which means that they won't be harmed in this way, is by using contraception.
Right, so you're harming them in some other way that's quarter of a, you're offering them the slower death. You're still going to be killed. Okay, let's just understand. They're just saying, we won't kill you quickly, we'll let you die naturally. Okay, so that's not great in the first place, right? Wouldn't, I mean, as a decent human being, right, if I had the power to give every human being the power to just push a button when they're done, you know, I'm done, stop functioning, I would give them the button. I'd say, well, why, you know, why not? Why shouldn't every human being be able to have this control and be able to say, I'll decide, and it's my life, it's blah, blah, blah. Of course I would do that. Of course I'd give every animal that option. And so what are you doing here? You're just saying, okay, you know, instead of doing this once, okay, and getting it over with, okay, and I'm going to do it better than nature's average death. So let's understand, no matter how I kill them almost. I mean, you know what I mean? I could come up with some way to suffocate them. I could come up with, and they would die in a, you know, at worst 13 seconds or something. It might take 13 seconds to kill them. You think nature's going to be that kind? You think nature's going to just take 13 seconds to kill them? So, you know, it's... What are you really arguing here? Again, prolonging a life is ensuring a death still, okay? You haven't evaded death. All you're saying is that somehow it makes sense to you that instead of killing them now quickly and efficiently, I'll let them live a natural life and be killed by nature in some horrible way. How does that actually make sense? That's the question. How is that showing your love or consideration or any of that stuff? Because I can't see it. Give them never wake up berries.
Exception. The same thing happens, for instance, with deer, or shall we say deers, because they are not an uncomfortable mass, even if this is not a standard English, that are also threatened by hunters, because, you know, people think that their numbers are too high. So contraception is a sound alternative.
Well, their numbers are too high. It's just a fact, okay, that they're evolving to eat shit, okay? I mean, plants that are almost poisonous to them because they don't have enough food. So they way are overpopulated. That's just no doubt about it. And yeah, they can't live in civilization. I mean, New Jersey, I think it's, I don't know, 40,000 deers a year are hit by a car. I mean, yeah. Come on. Silly.
Please. And there are many different examples of this.
Reintroduce bears for no good reason, just to make taking a walk in the park scary. Take a perfectly safe ride and make it dangerous because some people like danger. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. You got something that's perfectly safe and you just say, let's make it defective so it's not safe anymore. I mean, I had that experience. I mean, I had a path. I walked through the woods to get to where I worked. And, about a half mile walk or something like that. And there was a bear in my path. And you're just like, well, what the fuck am I supposed to do? You know, what do I got to do? I can't challenge the bear, you know. And you're just like, I don't want to be a complete sissy, but yeah, I'm staying 100 feet away, okay? So I'll just watch him from a distance. But I almost turned onto a bridge that Breeder Bear almost just came off of. And you're just like saying, yeah, you could end up scaring something. It could have cubs, and then you're really in trouble. It just takes all the fun out of being in nature. So it's so hard to understand how anybody with good intentions could think up this dumb idea of, yeah, let's introduce carnivores, you know, into our civilized environments. Why? Yes, sorry. Too stupid. That's what zoos are for, fuckhead. That's what, you know, Alaska is for. You want to go swim with the grizzlies? Go to Alaska, fuckhead.
You can see this one, I mean, the ones I presented come from different countries. You can see this one in the case of other animals in the UK. And you can see in the right that the announcement of a conference on fertility controls for wild animals, like boars, right? And it's a conference that took place in a university.
So I just say again, I mean, I think some of the one of these key factors that people aren't considering is that when we put these animals, we subject them to a medical experiment. Unlike humans, they can't say, gee, that sucked. That felt like chemotherapy. Made me horribly sick. They can't go through surgery and say, I need more meds. You know, give me more meds. They can't do any of that. So, you know, when you cut their nuts off or, you know, cut them open and fuck with their ovaries and do these surgeries on them, they don't wake up from the surgery in some nice hospital where somebody's, oh, how do you feel? Are you okay? No, none of that shit happens. Even when it's done to you, it's not fun, okay? There's nothing fun about surgery. And so that's what you're imposing. You're not imposing some sort of wonderful gift. Here's your wonderful gift. Here's your appendicitis operation or something. Fuck you. That's not a gift.
Barcelona. And there are other examples of this. So in some cases, contraception is kind of difficult because you need to inject a vaccine, including the contraceptive, to animals. This happens, for instance, in the case of contraception used with large ungulates. But for instance, in the case of other animals, you can administrate orally the contraceptive. I mean, you can create some, you know, food products that will contact the vaccine, as you can see here in this picture. So, as we've seen, then this is something that is widely available. This is something that has been done, and this is something.
So it's like an insidious Dr. Mengele kind of thing, right? You could almost say, right, if they put you in some zoo and then they gave you something that, you know, you'll never, you know, you can't get an erection. They make it impotent. and you're stuck in some zoo and you're impotent and, you know, what are you gonna, what are you, what are you gonna live for then? You know. I mean, you know, the a big hunk of whatever it is that we call this beautiful passion thing is just extracted out of the game. You know, one of the, your favorite foods is taken away and you're just left eating gruel forever in the camp. And these people think they did you a favor.
I think that, you know, it's backed by science and even by governments. So, for instance, these two...
I mean, if you're going to cut my nuts off, just cut my head off, okay? I mean, just forget it. Come on, forget it. Forget it.
You know, screenshots here come from the British government, right? And from a British governmental agency. And they address two different ways in which animals could be, you know, administered contraception. There are different ways in which this can happen. So, for instance, with large herbivores, typically they are now using a product called Gonacon. In the past, they have been using also PCP. So these products basically prevent the animals from reproducing, but they need to be...
Yeah, they probably destroy their kidneys and fuck with their livers and do all kinds of other crap that doesn't make their life all that fucking blissful. You know. I don't think they'd sign up for it. I think they'd also say, if you're going to do these fucking medical experiments on me, just cut my fucking head off, all right? Give me the fucking never wake up berries, you fucking idiot. I'm a squirrel, okay? I got no, there's nothing going on here. I'm just eating nuts, fucking the bitches, and going to sleep, okay? There's nothing else happening here. I'm running from shit all the time. I'm always constantly worried. Yeah, do me a favor. Give me the never wake up berries.
Administer these products every now and then, so it's not like, you know, neutering, right? In some cases, neutering could be used, but it's more costly and so on.
Oh yeah, it's costly. It's insanely costly, right? So for every feral cat they could humanely dispose of, okay, efficiently prevent it from propagating and procreating. You know, they'll just throw, you know, it's like having $1,000 and they just throw 999 of them away. I mean, it's so inefficient, you know, doing this attempt to accomplish the task through all of this attempt to capture and release and all this. That's just a horror. I'll capture you, cut your nuts off, and then throw you back in hell because I love you. To be killed by nature in some brutal way. I mean, it's like giving your pet to, you know, Freddy Krueger. Why the fuck would you do that?
But there are other alternatives, at least with some animals, that are relatively cheap, as I mentioned before, just with, you know, feeding them with something that contains the contraception. Why is this important? It's important, first, because it can prevent humans from killing animals. Second, because it can also help us to help the animals, as I mentioned before.
Let's understand, okay? It's really not about humans killing animals. It can never be a subject, frankly. I think it's obscene that a human being could enjoy killing animals. But the idea that human beings kill animals more efficiently than nature does is just an overt fact. Okay, that in 99% of cases, a human is going to kill the animal a lot quicker and more gracefully than nature will. So if you leave it to nature, you can ensure it will be twice as bad or four times as bad or 100 times as bad or 1,000 times as bad. And it's only when humans make a mess of it, okay, that you know, they do a half job. They shoot it with an arrow and lose track of it or something. I've experienced that wonderful, charming, witnessed that spectacle. You know, I've witnessed, you know, a deer running with an arrow in its guts, and a deer who ran from a hunter and broke its leg, and now, you know, it has a useless leg, and, you know, he's doomed. They don't grow back. You know, it's just horrible. But I'm just saying, most of the time, all you're doing is you're saying, look, humans shouldn't kill it because nature should. There's no logic in saying that. You want to prevent it from dying badly. That you can do. So do it.
We can help the animals while at the same time we prevent the bad effects that could have. And then, on top of that, we can also have
I just don't want to take a shot at Judaism, but I mean, obviously the fucking, bullshit where they torture the animal to death for God. I mean, that's the kind of stuff. That's where it gets inefficient for no good reason. Let's do it inefficiently for no fucking good reason as a fucking tribute to, our bullshit fables. I mean, that kind of nonsense. Jesus, you got to just say, what kind of fucktard would do this? As a tribute to God, I'm going to torture the animal. I am showing God how much I love him. Fuck you.
Impact in, and this may be the most controversial effect that it has, which is that it can make it the case that the animals that are present in certain ecosystems are those that typically have better lives instead of worse lives, which, as we saw, it's actually the case. Not all animals have the same levels of well-being, and as we also saw, and many of...
Well, I don't know if we saw any of that, but, it says you, so again, this whole idea of what a happy life is, right? I mean, a little rat can look all happy eating its little thing. But yeah, if you add it up all, it's the whole life. It's constantly being bugged by fear and panic and worry and all of this crap. And yeah, you could have a fat gerbil, I suppose, in his little gerbil cage, but then he could get bored, and start losing any capacity to even be in reality anymore and just be staring into space. So who knows? This whole idea of whatever happiness is, right, is because we just count how many times the corner of your mouth goes above a certain line, and then we'll say, oh, you lived a better life. I don't think that's a very decent or reasonable standard.
Then are actually not blessed by coming into existence, but it's just the other way around for them. They suffer very significantly in the process. We do have the support here, often, of a significant part of the public, also by governmental agencies, and, it's something that is growing.
It's a stupid waste of the resources. You should devote the resources to the humane eradication of the gladiator war. Knock down the stadiums, knock down the arenas, knock down the support for this horrible, stupid carnage. And recognize that the real, in the end, okay, the only way you're going to win that war is you have to nuke it from space.
In this website here, you can Google it. You can see how many, cases of interventions like this are taking place around, So that list there, you see, it's not exhaustive, it's just a screenshot. The list is much longer. And
I just, this is not, wow, it's stunning, all this great progress, blah, blah, blah. No. I mean, the percentage of animals being protected from harm... brutal death from nature. There's no evidence that that's what you're accomplishing.
This is something that
most of these interventions are to create sustainable populations, so human beings can play with the animals and abuse them and use them, and
That is continuing to be the object of scientific research. So, for instance, this is a screenshot of a scientific paper that was published just this year, addressing this from a wide perspective, considering different approaches to this. And in this slide here, you can also see a picture from a recent report that was published at the Animal Ethics website. Animal Ethics is the organization I work with. In this case, it reviews methods of contraception for wild animals. So all this means that this is a promising way of helping animals, that might...
Yeah, right. I again, help them to what? You can end their procreative future, okay, by just not allowing them, let them go to sleep and not letting them wake up. It's a much better strategy. Sneaking up on them when they're asleep and preventing them from waking up would cost less money. Just a fact. So why pretend you're doing them some sort of favor by letting them be killed by nature? Why?
Much more attention should be paid.
Because it makes you feel better? I don't know. Even though it's logically vacuous nonsense. All right, well, I guess we'll leave there. So it's really great. I love that this guy's making this presentation, this whole little whatever it is, this event was worth it just to have this guy talk about how fucking horrible nature is. Obviously, he's not, he stopped doing that. Now he's talking about how we can find some way to make it all okay by throwing magical sprinkles of, virus at the problem or something. We're going to fix it. No, that's not going to work. But the fact that he's pointing out that the horror is real, and it's, frankly, we do have power. And the whole point is are we going to use it? Or are we going to let the victim get raped? We're just going to sit in our chair and, eat your ice cream cone, and you're just not going to give a shit. Give a real shit. A useful shit. All right. So, I think that's a video. So, till the next time, probably we'll play the other half of this, but maybe we'll move on to the next thing, come back to this another day, just because it all gets, it's the heaviest of the subjects, frankly, for me. It's the darkest, most horrid thing is once your brain starts thinking about, besides my own mortality, just appreciating, all of this consciousness trapped in ignorance. These poor animals, they're just stupid. They just don't know what's happening to them. They don't know how they're being used by this DNA molecule, manipulated and controlled by their own genetic code, by their own speciesism, all of this stuff, and they can't step past any of that, and they can't, they have to they can't learn. They can't, they'll eat something like the baboons. They'll eat some tainted meat that was thrown out when it's not even their preference, but it's food. So they ate it and they get tuberculosis. They're every step they take. I think of feral cats and I think of them eating garbage and I think, what if somebody throws a broken bottle in their garbage, a broken bottle of some kind of soup or something, and the cat ingests glass? Fuck. It's just not acceptable. There's nothing I can imagine that we could possibly do in this universe that could justify the fact that we sat on the porch and ate our ice cream cone while the cat ate the glass. I can't do anything with this except, go crazy. I don't know. What am I going to do? What do I do? How do I prevent my neurons are saying from I'm in a madhouse. I'm Charlton Heston in Ape City. And yeah, it's like, what do I do? It's not acceptable, but I don't have a door that says go through this not acceptable door. All I can do is die. And then I won't be able to make arguments anymore. So that's not a really viable alternative. But certainly for people who don't, there's lots of people who think, all you depressives and you kill yourself, and it's so terrible and blah, blah, blah. Oh yeah, it's just terrible that people in pain should get out of being in pain. That would be just terrible. They should suffer forever until they die naturally. The cruelty in people's fucking fanaticism, I'm squinting. It's just the cruelty that you people are capable of in the name of Jesus or some kind of bullshit. And it's just like, fuck. God damn, does this planet suck. Ugh. Just hate it here. Anyway, on that note, Happy New Year. Yeah. Get what you deserve.